Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to be joined tonight by Rebecca from Texas. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to have you on the air.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Good. And I'm really excited to hear about peaceful politics because from conditioned mind, in my experience, those two are just not in the same sentence.
Your mind and a lot of people's mind, including.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, and I think they should be, don't you?
Yes, I agree 100%.
Well, especially when you consider that our practice is really about using everything that causes us to suffer to wake up and end suffering.
That's
even politics.
Yes. And as you're talking, in my experience, it's those, you know, exceptions to what I think should be part of my practice that are the things that I really need to look at.
Yeah, you know, and it is such a, it, you know, once that shift is made, it just seems so self-evident that, of course, something that is so really shapes our society and has so much potential and so much power to really change lives can really be included in that realm of practice. And really, I mean, my goodness, I think enough of us really, all of us, I would project to some degree, have that stumbling block, have that as a stumbling block.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah. It's like, you know, for me, one of the greatest gifts that the practice has given me is it's given me a way to negotiate, in a sense, if you will, those competing interests within myself. So I have a part of me that wants to quit my job and join the Peace Corps, and another part of me who wants to be responsible and make a lot of money, or part of me who wants to lose 10 pounds and the other party wants to eat chocolate with every meal. You know, so there are these competing interests that really vie for the attention and the airtime in this person I call Rebecca, you know. So
yes.
So there is just, if we can project that out, as if that were a microcosm then of the larger community, there are competing interests, you know, that vie for who gets the airtime, who gets the attention of these larger entities we call our community, our state, our country. And so really if we take the attitude of we're going to engage in this way exactly as we engage with our subpersonalities, those parts of ourselves, we can do that from a place of conscious, compassionate awareness and really get to this place that's best for all. And so not only does it help alleviate the pain and, you know, in the world, but also our own suffering, if
yes,
we're willing to take it on as a practice, that is.
Yes, yes. To me, what's exciting about what you're talking about is looking inward to see how that process works of all those competing interests that you were talking about. And then,
yeah. You
know, and then on a community scale, whether it's local or national or whatever, to see that same kind of process that all of those different sort of, you know, what at first seemed like competing parts don't really, you know, need to be kept in that realm of competition,
yeah. But
they can all be there and there's space for everybody.
Yeah, that there really is such a place called common good or what's best for all, you know,
yeah.
and that it's really possible to find that. And that's what I think we really can go for. And when, you know, seeing the possibilities is just quite inspiring, I think.
Yes, yes. So tell me more about peaceful politics and what you see about that. And I've noticed also on the Living Compassion calendar that there's an upcoming retreat with that title.
Yeah, retreat, yeah. So Sherry and I will be leading a retreat in October, October 8th through the 12th, there at the monastery. And what we'll be doing is kind of doing what we do, you know, looking at different processes around our beliefs and assumptions, what are our projections, you know, looking at the subpersonalities, all of those processes that keep us stuck, that keep us from participating, just exactly as we might in other areas of life, but looking at that in the realm of civic participation. And then how we can, you know, engage in these ways in a way that will end our suffering. Because really that's the flip side of this work. It's not about being activists to change the world. It's really about how can we engage in civic, you know, participation as a way to wake up and end suffering. You see the twist, huh?
So tell me if I'm following you. So I'm participating in politics in my community in whatever form that looks like as part of my sort of larger practice of waking up and ending suffering.
Go ahead.
So I can model how I sort of facilitate all of those parts of myself in the same way that I can model facilitating external conversations with people in my community who might have differing interests.
Yes, exactly. So I can notice in my engagement who pushes my buttons, what are my projections on this group of people, what are my projections on that group, what are the standards that conditioning is holding that says if we don't do this, then we're terrible people, or if we do this, we're missing the boat, or what are those standards that I can challenge, what are the assumptions and beliefs that anytime I pick up the newspaper, I just get hurled into this whole sea of suffering because I just think what a terrible place the world is. Or, you know, those are the things that if we can look at through the mind of awareness, then we can begin to see that that those assumptions aren't necessarily so, and they certainly don't need to dictate our lives. And in doing so, ending our own suffering, and then I think, you know, that's our best opportunity to really be present to the very real pain that is in the world and how we want to be with that and how we want to address it. Not from a place of should or aren't they wrong or, you know, I've got to come in and be the Lone Ranger and save the town, but rather from a place of we are working in this together.
Uh-huh.
And I think that, you know, that's our best shot at ending our own suffering and in the larger world.
Yes, that's definitely
Not unlike what I think has been modeled so beautifully with the work in Africa, you know, and the peace storming. It's like nobody's going in there, that I project anyway, with this idea that, oh, they need us so badly. You know, it's much more of a place of we are in this together, and it's from that, you know, lack of leaving the illusion of a separate self that we can really get such mutual joy.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's possible in our politics and our civic engagement as well. That's my experience anyway.
That's your experience. Yeah, and it's exciting to me to see you model that and go out in the world and offer that. You know, that this is a possibility.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's been a very exciting adventure, and I'm really looking forward to the retreat. I hope it's a full retreat with a lot of people that want to look at this together.
Yes. Yes, yes, definitely. And the thing that keeps coming up for me as you're talking is, you know, there's a presidential election coming up, and, you know, the media sort of seems to me sort of it's set up to push me to try to be on one side or the other and to make one the right side and one the wrong side. And after the election, you know, we're all still living here together.
Yeah.
You know, we all have to figure out how to make that work.
That's right. Then
and to make them wrong and mean right doesn't facilitate that.
Yeah, yeah. There is no shortage of sides to be on, are there? Because if the party sides aren't good enough, then you can be on issue sides. And if that's
yes.
not enough, then you could be on personality sides. You know, and there's
yes.
just all of these sides that we can, all of these divisions that are possible, you know, if we're willing, if we want to go there. But of course, what's possible is this other, you know, this other way, this middle way, of not taking a side.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you're right. You know, when November comes and goes, you know, we're all still here.
Yes. 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 Well, it's very exciting, and I'll be excited to hear about the retreat.
Well, thanks. Maybe hopefully you'll even be able to come.
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
Miracles never cease.
That's right. Hey, the fact that we're even talking about this to me is a miracle. So I think that's evidence that you're right. Miracles never cease.
Miracles never cease. With practice.
Well, thank you.
Definitely. Rebecca, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you,
okay.
Michael.
You're welcome. Good night.
Take care. Bye.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good. I enjoyed that conversation a lot.
Oh, great.
Because whether people care to believe it or not, we are getting ready to put out the invitation to sign up for the 3-month practice opportunity. And what you and Rebecca were talking about is just is very much the same thing that I'm hoping for with practice opportunity, that people will take on a challenge, whatever that challenge is, and use that as a way of focusing on waking up and ending suffering, which, of course, is what we're always focusing on. So with politics, it's so easy for us to get lost in, yes, but the stakes are so high. We've got to this, and it's got to be that way, and if this doesn't happen, and oh, my God. And I was talking to somebody recently about Nixon and Watergate, and the person I was talking to was saying how the mother in the family would stand in iron and scream at the TV during the whole impeachment process or whatever it was, leading up to his resignation. And now that's just such a tiny footnote in history. It's not like, then when we were involved in it, it was just so life and death. The whole future of the world hinged on the outcome of this. And now, entire generations exist to, like Nixon, who is Nixon? So
right.
The thing that is a constant, of course, is how we are in our lives with each other, whether what we're doing, what we're focusing on is leading us toward suffering or away from suffering. And that's going to stay with us long past the big event is that society wants us to get terribly worked up about. So to focus on, with politics, creating a kinder, more respectful, more polite, engaged, involved community, what a great thing, rather than, yay, our side won, or those so-and-sos better lose.
Uh-huh.
Because that, the one carries far beyond politics and what's going on right now, and the other does too. It's just which one do we want to live with. So, that's this practice. Whatever the content is, that's what we're looking at. How is this a projection? How can I use this as an opportunity to come back to center, to drop everything that all those beliefs and assumptions, so that I can be here in conscious compassion and awareness and embrace everything that suffers into that. Yeah.
Yeah. So once again, focus on the process, because in my experience, today I'm upset about this, and then pretty soon that's gone, and then the next thing is there, right in its place.
Oh, precisely. And your comment about the media. Now the media wants us to get all involved with fear and hate about this. And then now we're supposed to get involved with fear and hate about that, and on and on and on. And it's our opportunity to say, I don't want to get engaged with fear and hate about anything.
Yes, yes. Which to me is so wonderful about the practice, which is always, in my experience, you're always pointing us back, what's the process?
Mm-hmm. Because that's all we've got.
Yes.
Conditioned mind has a field day confusing people about content, but this is really real. This is really, yes, but you've got to, it would be irresponsible. You have to, the right person is going to, if you don't, this piece of content, and lose sight of the process altogether. Lose sight of the fact, as you say, that now it's this, now it's this, now it's this. And when that's gone, we'll still all be here doing whatever it is that we're doing. And if the process is one that makes us unhappy and makes those around us unhappy and just leads us all to suffering, that's what we're going to be left with. And I recognize that it is a scary thing for people to turn loose of that grip on the content in order to focus on the process, because the voices are so insistent that no, in this moment, if you do the wrong thing, if you make the wrong decision, then all these awful things will happen. And to have the trust, have the faith in that larger perspective that says, I think that I'm going to be able to drop this and come back to center. If there's something real about this, I'll know in the moment from center how to approach it.
Uh-huh. Wow. So it
takes a lot of practice, really, for people to be able to get it, how long life has been going on, how short our time is, and really what's at stake here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's good stuff to look at.
Yes.
I find it's good stuff to devote one's life to.
I give a thumbs up to that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And, you know, for me, the modeling of the practice that you and the monks and people who are committed to practice, I can see the possibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that's not, you know, in conditioned mind, I can't see how it can be done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in conditioned mind, there is no way. That's
right.
The beauty of it.
Right.
You know, that's the corner that we turn eventually, is to realize that in conditioned mind, there is no solution, there never has been, and there never will be. Because the whole point of conditioned mind is to keep us in that turmoil and dissatisfaction, something wrong and not enough. That's the whole point. And, of course, it pulls us in time after time after time, promising us a solution and satisfaction. Every time, if we can get enough distance to notice, every time it pulls us in, dissatisfaction, suffering, misery. No solution to anything. Just another problem that is meant to cause us to be miserable.
Yes, yes. And as you pointed out, paying attention is really the only way out of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as I'm fond of pointing out, it's very simple. We learn to turn our attention away from what's causing us to be miserable and turn it back to here, the present moment, where that's not going on and what's surrounding us is perfectly fine. I mean, people will say, well, that's great because you have enough to eat. That's great because you have good health. That's great because, no, it's the same rules for everybody all the time. And at the moment of death, even when we're in pain, even when all things are falling down around us, when we are here, the experience is well-being. And we just have to practice that enough to prove it to ourselves.
Yes, yes. Practice, practice, practice.
That's it.
Sherry, I would love to talk more, and I know that there are other people here who would also like to talk with you.
All right.
Okay. First call, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Nancy from Driftwood, Texas.
Hello.
My question, I live with two mental illness diagnoses. One of them is severe PTSD from childhood, and the other is bipolar. And when I first was introduced to Vipassana meditation in the late 90s, Buddhist philosophy and meditation just seemed like a lifeline to me. But when I went on retreats, I would go into overwhelm. And finally, after four or five retreats with some very kind teachers, they just told me that maybe I shouldn't be doing that. And that's something I think I've missed a lot, but it might just be that I was using that as a way to beat myself up. I don't know. I notice that even in making this call am waiting my turn, I just feel so much anxiety that I can barely talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to sit here acknowledging that that I am, in fact, fine, but it's sort of like fine is right outside of me.
Yes, and it's a practice. Right. First of all, now, I'm not saying that these people were wrong, far from it, but people on retreat feeling overwhelmed is not an unusual experience.
Well, I was really overwhelmed. I mean,
yes,
I abreacted or whatever. And so I guess my first question is, I have really been wanting to come to a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat. So my first question, and if this isn't appropriate on the air, would just be, you know, is that okay?
Well, what you could do is go through the process of signing up.
Uh-huh.
And there is a whole process that goes with that. So in the course of getting to the retreat, everybody will get clear on whether that's a good thing for you to be doing or not.
Okay, well, that is encouraging. And then the next one is, I just, I dissociate really readily, and sometimes I really have a hard time telling the difference between Buddhist philosophy and dissociation.
How so?
The whole idea of just letting everything go and trusting. Well, that's pretty similar to just dissociating. I mean, at least I hear it.
Well, not actually. Not actually. Because one is based on a perspective that is a lot, this is how I would describe it. The world has existed for a really long time. There have been a lot of people. Most of them are now dead or soon will be. We get caught up in all kinds of things based on stories in our minds that have absolutely no importance and no relevance. When we understand what's actually important in life, then we'll practice being with that instead of caught up in a conversation about stuff that's not real and not important. That really doesn't have anything to do with dissociation.
And listening to the radio shows and the books and doing the email classes have helped me tremendously.
Great.
Just to even quit believing layer after layer of voices. I guess I just really have the last big bastion of fears around. Would you say then the stories are the same as like a brain chemistry imbalance?
Here's the problem with getting a diagnosis. People tend to believe them. And then they start running everything through that diagnosis. If people could understand how similar we all are, life would be a lot easier. So instead of looking to conditioned mind to explain what's going on with one, to come back to the present and look at what's going on without any meaning attached to it at all, I would suggest would be very freeing. You see, it's not possible to be afraid without a story. It's not possible to be afraid without beliefs. And so what people do is focus on the fear rather than focusing on the cause of what gets labeled fear. The fear can never be addressed because it's not real. Are you with me?
I'm actually probably going away.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what then. Here's what would be best. You listen to this as a podcast. Okay? Listen to the recordings of it. Take this in. Integrate it. Get to where you get to with it. And then we can talk again.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I have another caller here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Rico.
Hi, Rico.
California. Hi, Sherry.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good. I'm responding to a call I had with you about 4 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was the happy guy, and you had a comment that you were suspicious of people with a superficial veneer of da-da-da-da-da. And so that...
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Or is that your interpretation of what I said?
Well... I wrote it down, the quote, superficial veneer. I don't know if you were specifically addressing me and my process, but I remember specifically superficial veneer.
Uh-huh.
At any rate, that caught my attention, and so you invited me to be more focused on the inquiry about the process than the content.
Uh-huh.
So I took that to heart, and I ended up with a bronchial pneumonia in the middle of June, so I spent 5 weeks in bed.
Wow.
And there was plenty of time to examine the process. And
mm-hmm.
What I discovered was that it's almost like I have this default attitude of buoyancy, of okay, everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's some truth to that, but after digging, I realized that basically it was a cover-up for some anxiety. Like, behind it all, there's a certain amount of anxiety.
Uh-huh.
I spent a considerable amount of time in an oxygen tent as a child for asthma, where I was kind of like trapped in the oxygen tent. And I said, oh, gee, maybe there's... So I feel like I'm working at paying attention to the process.
Uh-huh.
And, I've been very active and just getting tremendous benefit from the reflective listening practice.
Oh, good.
And it's almost... I mean, it's beautiful timing because a week ago I've had some real problems with a back issue and nothing's helping, and so I was going in for an MRI, and they put me in this tunnel on a tray, and gee whiz, I wasn't the buoyant, happy guy.
Mm.
And...
Was it kind of a quick trip back to being that little guy trapped in that tent?
Well, yeah, like very quick. And so I panicked. I said, get me out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, okay, this is not uncommon. And I had to go back and see my doctor. He gave me some tranquilizers. And then I went in for what is called an open MRI. And...
I see. So there's an alternative that isn't hideous and traumatic, but you only get that if you freak out over the first one.
Yeah, something like
uh-huh.
But the point is, even though I was medicated, and of course, conditioning wants to have a commentary about, oh, so you're a man's man, and you're an aviator, and you're an ocean sailor, and you get scared in a da-da-da-da-da, and you have to take pills? Oh. And so, of course, the mentor shows up. And I'm just so grateful for what I've been exposed to in the years that I've been with you, and like getting down into the trenches here, I see, oh boy, you know, like, yeah, there's a personality that's happy, and there's also a personality that's scared, and they're all okay.
Exactly.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. And
yep.
We don't
have to pick the right person and then go with that. What we're doing is unconditional acceptance for everything as it is.
Hallelujah. So my report is that it hasn't been a fun ride, and I was really sick with pneumonia, and I couldn't expectorate, and a couple trips to the hospital, and drowning in your phlegm, and behind it all, I mean, and then the whole MRI deal, it's like, this is not theory. We're like, this is the nitty-gritty. And
And that's that quote, this is what we practice for.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm here to report that the mentoring is happening, and I'm deeply appreciative, that I met you, and that I've been able to do some retreats. And the reflective listening has been such an important part, and I'm surprised, because it didn't seem like such a big deal.
Right.
I mean,
it is.
So today my reflective listening partner and I happened to have a shift of schedule, and he called it high noon. And
uh-huh.
I just come from a very disturbing event. And my neighbor across the street, who I've been taking care of for a couple of years, old man, has been put into hospice. And he has no immediate relatives. And the next-door neighbor is determined to chop down two beautiful trees, just gorgeous, gorgeous trees. And so I happened to be out when the tree surgeon came. Well, of course, the tree surgeon wants to do the work to pay the bills. And the neighbor is trying to convince him that these trees are diseased and dangerous. And so the neighbor who wants these trees down leaves to go get some paperwork, and I ask the surgeon, you know, like, what's up? He said, you know, I don't know, but these trees look healthy to me, and there's no danger, and they're downwind if there's ever a big wind. So I kind of shrugged my shoulders, and the phone rang.
Rico,
yes?
we need to cut to the what do you call it in
okay.
a
cut the chase.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, the phone rings, and my reflective listening partner, and this is what I process. And in the process of reflective listening, I realize, oh, it's an opportunity to identify the subpersonalities, and it's an opportunity to realize the voices and what they want to have to say, and it's also an opportunity to take a deep breath and say, oh, well.
Uh-huh. And as we were talking about earlier with the peaceful politics, not needing to decide who are the good guys and who are the bad guys, but just to be with everybody and work toward that peaceful solution that is most compassionate for all.
Well, that's it. The compassion is the key word.
Mm-hmm.
The compassion is for myself, because I could get into a big war about this, but I'm not going to win, and then who needs to win?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
Well, this is a big thank you for everything.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm glad that you're practicing, and I'm glad that you are experiencing the benefits of it. That's a glorious thing.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Good night, Michael. Thank you.
Good night, Rika. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, what a life, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have three more callers in the queue here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Hello.
You got a report, huh?
Yeah. I got to start a little, and then I don't know, that phone cut off last week, but it was good. It just gave me more opportunities to keep looking, so.
good. Yeah, you just fell into the void, didn't you?
I know, it was very strange, but, you know, like I said, I just took that to mean that I was supposed to just keep looking at things. So. I'm just really grateful for your help in looking, and I'm seeing that I have a part of my personality, a sub-personality, I guess, that's just really strong and I think in charge a lot, that has a lot going about you're not valuable unless you're working really hard. Yeah, and especially now, you know, I'm not working outside of my home right now, and I'm not bringing in money, and there's a lot of conditioning about money, too, and this morning, my husband went to work, and I think he said something like, I'm going to work now. And, you know, I noticed, what I heard was, and you're staying home, you filthy slob loser that's living off of me. I mean, it was, you know.
I'm sure that was it. And did you check it out? Did you say, honey, now, is what you mean? Probably not, huh?
No, not at all. I just spun into it for a while and spent, you know, a lot of the day crying and, but, you know, then I kind of practiced being with the person who was crying and what was going on for that person and just starting to see a lot of this. I actually last week had spent some time with my mom, and she and I had been talking about a little of this too, because she's got a lot of the same conditioning that was probably shared with her and then shared with me. It's just really interesting, and I'm trying to look at a place of kind of knowing that, you know, I and everybody is valuable whether or not we're, you know, getting a lot of things done, I guess.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What do you think is important in life?
Who are you asking? I see that person coming up that wants to respond with, like, you know, achieving things and stuff. So I think that person.
Uh-huh. And so earlier we were talking about all the people who have lived on this earth and are all dead.
Yes.
And we can guess that a lot of them spent their time achieving a lot of stuff.
Yes.
But we actually don't have any idea what it was that they were achieving.
Yeah.
And so when we look at what's important to – let's go in this direction, see if we can – get around this. When we look at the people in our lives, is it more important that they are getting a lot of stuff done, or that they are kind and loving toward us?
Definitely choice two.
Yeah. And so when we look at what we want for the world, do we want a humanity that's getting a lot done, or a humanity that is conscious and concerned and compassionate and kind?
Yeah, choice two again.
Yeah, we can all see where this is going, huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. So now, what do you think? What do you see?
I definitely see that, and that was some of what I saw today. I mean, today actually ended up being a really neat day because I found a lot of kindness for that person who was listening to all those voices about, you know, how they're not valuable because they're not achieving or whatever. And then in the kindness, I just see how this could get taken over. But, you know, with the kindness then, it was like I could just start doing things. Because this is where I get a little tripped up, is not even working outside the home. But there are things that I sort of just want to get done.
Wait.
Okay.
Here's another one.
Yeah.
There are things that you want to get done or things that you want to do?
Things that I want to do. Okay, yeah. The other person wants to get them done, but
that's
yeah,
right. And we all joke about that a lot, right? So you want to get this done and get that done and get that done and get that done and get that done. And what it's really amounting to is get done with life so that you can get on to dying.
Okay, yeah.
So if there are a lot of things you want to do, then we have that choice open up to us of how we want to do it. But there is literally no room for process in get something done.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a check mark on a list.
Yes, and this strong, driven personality loves lists and loves checking things off the list, yes.
Okay, now, doing is the realm of ego.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it can always keep you in a conversation about the past or the future. It's always focused on something that doesn't actually exist. So there's that person is in a workshop or a retreat. They have a huge insight. Everything kind of opens up and comes together for them. And the first thing out of their mouth as ego begins to take over their life again is, yeah, but what do I do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But doing, in the sense of participating, is what life seems to enjoy most about the human form.
I'm going to look at those distinctions. Yeah, I think it felt very different. The quality of things happening today did feel like participating, and there I was enjoying it, and there wasn't that driven quality. In fact, I didn't even go to the list. It was just that, you know, sort of the things that needed to happen were able to happen.
Yeah, to make life work.
Yeah, yeah.
And we get into that place of vacuuming the rug for the rug.
Right, yeah.
And doing the dishes for the dishes and cleaning up the kitchen for the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that's participating in life, because those are the things that make a life work.
Yeah.
And at some point, you'll go out probably and you'll do something that somebody pays you to do.
Yes.
But how you do that is going to determine whether you enjoy your life or you don't enjoy your life. And it'll probably also determine whether the people who hired you enjoy having hired you or not.
Yeah.
Because you know what it's like to be around someone who is frantic and urgent and driven. And of course you can quickly suspect that it's not serving anything but their own ego. Because it's not making them more effective or more efficient. It's not making them pleasant to be around. It's really just a self-serving kind of a thing that we conditioned humans can get into. Makes us feel important to be busy like that.
Exactly. I think that's been a big thing that I've seen is right, that's the conversation that wants to come in is, you know, you're unimportant now. You're not out doing the important things that have to be, you know, and
Yeah. So what if the world were set up that you're really not important, you're really not a contribution, you're not really doing anything that's valuable if you're not centered?
I think the driven one wants to figure out how to get centered now because that's valuable.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. If somebody wants to be driven to something, driven to center would be not a bad way to go.
Better way to go than other,
Yeah. I mean, if you just, not to get terribly political, but people who have that driven to get things done are busy clear-cutting the forests of the earth.
Yes, without being conscious of what's,
That's right. But it's getting stuff done. It's being important. It's going out there every day and making something happen, especially something that results in a lot of money.
Yeah, yes.
But is that really what we want to do?
Yeah, this is really good stuff to look at. And I, you know, I'm just, I mean, I know there is somebody that wants to say, how do I recreate this day now? And I know that that's conditioning, wanting to, again, do and all that.
Out of the moment, into an idea.
Exactly.
I'm sure, I always look to Sister Phil, but she's not on the call with us, but she would be able to tell us who said, first love, then do what you will.
Okay,
it might have been first love God, but, you know, whatever. First love, then do what you will. And we forget that first love part of it.
Yeah, absolutely, right. It's all about the...
So first get centered and then see what life asks you to do.
And is it like the parenting thing? Like is this a sub-personality that
no.
is so driven or is this...
No.
Okay. I thought maybe...
Egocentric karmic conditioning.
Okay.
And the way you can tell is the way it talks to you. Only egocentric karmic conditioning would interpret your husband saying, I'm going to work now, as a diatribe about what a lazy slob you are.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. The heart is just not going to go there.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe they're, you know, that's a really dominant personality and I need to let that person get some things done, but also have, no, okay.
Nope.
I guess that language is a big clue,
Yeah.
So I just am still, I mean, you know, I guess I'll just keep practicing and working with the kindness and the love. I guess that's really where to practice.
That's it.
Okay.
That's your job, to get to center and to watch and hear everything that pulls you away.
Yeah.
And just get your big, long lists of beliefs about what's more important than love, what's more important than kindness, what's more important than compassion, because that's what they're talking to you about.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you'll let us know.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I'm so grateful to be able to talk with you and to have this chance, because I realize if I can see some of this, like you said, then if I go more into the external world, I've got a lot better shot of being the way I want to be in it. So yeah,
that's right. Yeah, you have a firmer foundation.
Yes.
Mhm. Very good.
Thanks,
Jen.
Okay. Bye bye.
Good night.
Thanks, Michael. Bye bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I've noticed that when I am feeling kind and more centered, that I am able to do a lot more
of
what I want to do.
Absolutely. Well, and what needs to get done?
Yes.
You know, that from center, those are not mutually exclusive. From conditioning, you cannot be kind and get stuff done. You just can't. There's just not enough time for this kindness nonsense. But from center, you can be kind and get a lot of stuff done. It's a good deal.
Yes, and I
love you actually get more done.
Yes, and I love how you put being centered as pretty much the priority, the only priority.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's job one.
Sherry, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, another person has joined the queue, so we're still at three.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Steve from Albany, New York.
Hi, Steve. How are you
Hi,
doing?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm good.
Good.
Let's see. Let me get, well, it's kind of a little story here.
All right.
Some things happening in my sitting, and then some things happening outside my sitting, and a three-year-old chasing me around the house here. all right, I'm going to close the door if you keep doing that, Julia, okay, because no one can hear me. All right. I might have to go here, Sherry. Let me try this again.
All right.
Sienna, this isn't working at all. Okay.
You're under siege.
I'm under siege, yes. Well, it was so important to make a call that I called in spite of the fact that I couldn't guarantee this wouldn't happen.
Uh-huh.
But here I am. I go, all right, it's quiet. So
all right.
Something kind of happening while I'm sitting and something happening in my life, and I kind of want to, looking at how they are, they're different, and there's part of me that wants them to be more in line with each other. Here's an example. When I'm sitting, you know, just having really, experiences. Let's see, what am I seeing? This sense of compassion for myself.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, some thought comes along. It might be ego. It might just be sadness. All right, I'm going downstairs. Yeah, it might be. All right, I'm back.
All right.
Still there?
Yep.
This real sense of compassion for myself. So I, you know, have a thought and I can just really feel it. You know, almost like
mm-hmm.
this hug. And this
mm-hmm.
kind of kind of sound. And no matter what it is, I just seem to be able to be there.
Uh-huh.
Even if it's getting bitten by mosquitoes, it just seems to be like, that's okay. I can just sit there.
Uh-huh.
You know, I noticed that kind of spilling over into my life in places, that sense of compassion. With being able to be present with people who might have triggered me in the past.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of a sense of compassion for them, I guess you could say. And I'm just getting centered here because the kids are finally gone. But yet I notice, and I'm noticing lots of things about what triggers me in my
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very short list of people, you know, kind of in order from least often to most often. They're all women. It's interesting. Sister-in-law, mother-in-law, children, wife. And my wife is at the top of the list. And, you know, I guess I'm noticing why that's happened, because it happened last night in the car as we were driving home. And what it seems to be is the fact that I'm with her all the time, the fact that she feels comfortable saying whatever she wants to me. And I guess I feel comfortable saying whatever I want to her. And it might be that, you know, she, from my interpretation, gets triggered on something and, you know, does something that if I got an ego and went and told all my friends, they go, oh, yeah, 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 look at that, you know, poor you. Or it might be me misinterpreting an innocent comment. Maybe it doesn't even matter. But I guess that almost seems like an insurmountable barrier to get
through. Okay,
you want
a homework assignment?
Yeah.
Okay. And what you will I don't know what your relationship is like with your wife, but here's my encouragement. That you tell her that you're doing an awareness practice exercise. And so oftentimes when you're together and you're in a conversation, you're going to stop and do an internal exercise. And I would encourage you to ask her to be patient and tolerant and give you space not to need to tell her what your process is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so here's the exercise. She says something, and you have whatever reaction you have, and instead of saying something or going with an internal conversation about it, you look at what you're projecting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. You just notice what you're projecting. You don't go into, you don't let the voices take you into, well, that's probably true or that's not true, or it's a simple projection exercise. It's a Rorschach thing, okay? So I hold up a drawing and you tell me what you see, like that. No analysis, no anything. But you notice. So you notice what the projection is, and then you go on about whatever you're doing. And every time
you can...
The
projection could be something like, how dare she say this?
Well, yes. And then and then you would want to look at what you're projecting. Okay?
And what's
behind that. Yeah, that's right. What you believe. Because how dare she say that means that she's got something going about that. There's a message that she's giving. She has an attitude. She has something that she's projecting onto you.
Mm-hmm.
But you're the one creating all of that. You with me?
Yeah.
Okay, so give me no story. Just give me something she might say to you.
I can't stand it when you say that. Why can't you stop?
I can't. Okay, great. And so you hear that, and you attach a meaning. You project where she's coming from, what she means by that, what that says about her, what that says about you. And I want you to take the whatever period of time to start bringing your attention to what all of that is in you that's going on behind the scenes.
You know, as you're telling me, I'm really clear about what's going on most of the time. Most of the time, it's a part of me that wants to be nurtured by her. And then this is kind of flying in the face of being nurtured. And
so
it's versus this poor sadness. Oh, why am I being? And then it turns into anger. You know, can you see that?
So somebody is there who wants something and is in charge of interpreting who she is as not being what he needs.
Yes.
Okay? So that's very good to see, right? So
yeah.
There are several good things to see about that. One is, well, several. One is, I bet you don't tell her that. So she's left having to read your mind and guess what's going on. Two, there's an assumption that he's legit.
Yeah.
Rather than the very real possibility that he's just simply there to mess things up in your marriage and make you unhappy.
You know, there's two things that kind of prove your point there. One is the, you know, the times when I have told her, even when I've told her in kind of a really angry way about what I want, kind of really strong and maybe not carefully thought out and made to be gentle, she's come around sometimes after a couple minutes, but she has. And I've been doing that lately, and I think that's a little thing that, you know, it's coming from the practice, I think.
Yes.
Because I hadn't done that before.
Yeah, so for you to stop and take those few seconds to a minute to see what's going on with you, what kind of a reality is being created for you, rather than just a knee-jerk reaction. Then, you know, after those few seconds, you just go on about your life. I'm not saying, and so change your behavior or change what you're going to say to her or anything else. I just want you to bring conscious awareness to what, to the scene that's being created for you. Okay?
Okay.
All right. And then, of course, you're going to report back to us.
Okay. I got one caveat here.
Okay.
The issue around, like, for example, last night, you know, we were in the car. We'd been driving for an hour or two. The kids were asleep in the back seat. I was, you know, kind of zoned out, not in conscious mode, and the statement came completely unexpectedly around a need of hers to have a sip of water while we were driving on the back road.
To have what?
A sip of water while we were driving on a back road, which is kind of hard to drink in the car. So that catch me unawares thing, how do you have any thoughts on how to remember to do this exercise in those situations?
Well, it's going to be a practice for you. There are going to be a ton of those. You know, that's how conditioning keeps us in bondage, really, because we are used to having it as our most intimate relationship, and it is. It's that conditioned reality that is being created for you is a much more intimate relationship than any that you have with your loved ones in your life, okay? So there the two of you are, just zoning along, and all of a sudden somebody comes in from the outside and breaks into your concentration on each other. Can you get that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you're startled, and when we're startled, we look to, it happens so fast. When I say we look to, it sounds like, you know, you turn your head and you look and you, no. It's just immediate. And so ego reacts with whatever its reaction is to protect itself.
Mm-hmm.
Learning that its defenses are not you. In fact, it's not you. It's a relationship that you're in. And this is true not just with you. It's true with everybody. That relationship that you're in with it wants you exclusively for itself. Your wife is a real annoyance because she keeps interfering with its relationship with you. Ego is a jealous, jealous lover. Can you get a sense of that?
Yeah, and I also get a sense that, you know, the very ego's reaction be the very reminder, even if you go a little ways down that road, to take a breath and choose
precisely
another path.
Precisely. It's bringing conscious awareness to that that's going to inspire you to want to be present all the time. Because what we know is when we get lost in that unconscious world of relating to egocentric karmic conditioning, then what we bring to the real life, the one that our body is actually participating in, is unpleasantness and suffering, dissatisfaction and suffering. So there you are. You went to sleep and you got lulled into that ego reality. You got pulled out of it by something your wife says. It reacts. The best thing to do is say, I'm sorry, that was not skillful. Let me try that again as soon as you come to your senses.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get a beating for it. because that's the next thing. Self-hate is going to want to come in and beat you up for what ego just got you to do. No beatings. No beatings.
I think I'm getting the hang of that one.
Good. Very good. All right, so you let us know.
Okay, I'll call you back in a couple of weeks.
All right, very good. Thanks, Steve.
Hopefully without kids chasing me around the house.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Steve. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I can relate to kids chasing me around.
I was just thinking that. Michael knows that one.
Yes. Sherry, I'm so inspired by people calling in. It's just the willingness. It's just amazing.
Looking at our lives, trying to get out of this mess.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Sherry, we have one more caller, and we have about 4 minutes left.
All right. Well, we'll talk fast and make a date.
Okay, great. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Christina. I'm calling from the San Francisco Bay Area.
All right. What's going on?
Well, nothing's going on this hot minute, but I would love to hear you, if you want to go off about sleep and all the self-hate and the cultural trends and stuff about sleep, because I heard you say, I think a few weeks ago, that was really interesting, and it's really interesting to me, the stuff I've noticed when I'm sleeping, trying to sleep, think I should get more sleep, I didn't get enough sleep, I must be cranky because I didn't do it right, and it's almost like such a deeply swallowed and accepted like standard. It's almost as big as how you should look.
It's like exactly like you're 40 years old. If you've never worn glasses before, you have to get them now.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's like it's such a given. You're supposed to get amount.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you got to suffer.
Yeah. And all the meaning that's attached to it. You're absolutely right. And it is a fascinating one to break through, because there's just now I understand that there are apparent supposedly medical conditions in which people don't sleep and then they die. I don't know that for a fact, but I have heard people say that to me, and I wonder, even with that, how much of it is a result of what we're talking about. Because just about everybody I've ever talked to who struggles with sleep issues, one of the first things that they talk about is the anxiety that they have about not sleeping.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So, you're walking around, you're getting tired, it's time to go to sleep, you lie down, and your mind just goes into overdrive.
If I don't get it, I better start doing whatever I can do to sleep, and then more and more anxious.
Yeah, and then you have to have drugs, and
Yeah, because you got to get da-da-da amount,
mm-hmm.
or else something bad's going to happen, or whatever.
Yeah.
You go on.
Yeah.
And
the something bad that's going to happen, this is for everybody. See if this is the something bad that's always going to happen. I won't be able to stand the way I feel. I mean, if you think about it, what doesn't that apply to? All of the things that conditioning controls people with come down to, I won't be able to stand the way I feel.
And so I'll feel really crummy right now and take a beating or whatever, go on a story.
Yeah.
So that I don't end up feeling whatever down the road.
Yeah.
It's like I've had these moments where I just got like little blips in the system, like where I was on a great adventure, like in another country or something, and I didn't sleep the way I was supposed to, and I did not have the horrible experience that I was being threatened would always happen.
Yeah. Well, and of course, that's perfect, because if I'm at home and I'm at work or I'm at whatever and I didn't get enough sleep, then the voices are going to just be talking to me nonstop and make sure that I'm totally miserable. If I'm in an exciting place in another country, there's no way that I'm going to waste my time being involved with that conversation.
Exactly.
So I just get involved with whatever is there, and I have a good time.
And I'll sleep when I sleep.
And in fact, I don't want to sleep because I don't want to miss anything.
Right. And then as soon as sleep becomes a priority, because it's not as much, what I'm doing isn't quite as fun to outweigh that I need to sleep, then I'll sleep. It's like a reminds me of being a little kid, and you're just like, why would you ever want to take a nap? The
yeah.
world is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for you because it is a great awareness exercise. And, of course, the first thing to be aware of is, as you're saying, the belief systems. That just endless, to make that endless list of dreaded things that will happen to you if you don't sleep right. It's not even, it's not even, I go to sleep
right.
at this time and I wake up at this time. It has to be the right kind of sleep and the right this and the right.
In the right
yeah.
position.
Oh, yeah, because otherwise my back is going to hurt or my, oh, my God. It's just on and on and on and on. So make a list of that, all the beliefs. About sleep, and then just, it's kind of like making a list of all the things you want to do before you die, and then you just start checking off things from the list. And so make a big list of all of the things conditioning wants you to believe about sleep, and then just start putting check marks by them as you prove that that is simply not true. And of course, my encouragement always with people, anyway, we can talk about that another time, but if you're up anyway, for God's sake, don't miss how fabulous it is to be up in the middle of the night.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not to get involved, not to check things off of your to-do list, not to get up and be productive, not that, to get up and to relax and to be in the night and listen to what it sounds like and feel what it feels like and smell the smells that are different at night than during the daytime, to have it be a time of absolute pleasure. Always sleep with an open window so that you can have as much of the outside inside as possible. Okay.
Great.
Another report coming up.
Okay. Thank you kindly.
Thanks, Christina.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Christina. Sherry, another thrilling show.
Something else you can relate to, Michael. Not
yes.
sleeping.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Parenting. Oh, the joys it brings us. The opportunities that it affords us.
It's wonderful because there's really no way to get out of them.
That's right. Yeah, the die has been cast.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk next week.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael.
Night.
Good night.